Okay, so yesterday we talked a little bit about Mar-Ukva and that woman that he was sickly in love with, and how he stopped objectifying and decentralized his ego and was able to escape that. And he was called Nasa Tisa. When he walked around the marketplace, there was a glow or a radiance. Today let's talk about three people who were in the Yosef situation. One is of Yosef, and one is of Yitzhak, and one is of Akiva. When I say the Yosef situation, it's not just that you have a distant fantasy or attraction for a woman and you're sick over it, but you are in private. And you're in private, and it's expected of you, right? In the case of Mar-Ukva, we never interviewed the woman. She had a desire for a woman, and that's part of the story here, is objectification. I don't know if you hear this, there's an objectification. You don't hear the woman's voice. Maybe she does a woman. In Yosef's case, Eshes Potiphar is urging him. She wants it. She's goading him. And in the same case as Rabbi Tzadok and Rabbi Akiva, we'll see similar situations. So what did Yosef do? How did Yosef avoid his sin? How did Rabbi Tzadok avoid his sin? How did Rabbi Akiva avoid his sin? They're all in the same situation. Three different strategies for combating the Yitzhara in general, and this Yitzhara in particular. When it comes to Yosef, there's a lot in the Medrash and Vayeshev. Maybe when it comes to Parshas Vayeshev and Medrashim, we'll talk about it. But I just want to talk about one pasuk. When Yosef finally tells her it's not happening, right before he runs out, and she's holding onto his clothing, he says, V'chatasi lecha kol hayamim. That's his lashon. I will sin for eternity. Medrash says, Yosef's saying, that means we're going to be together in this world, and be together in the next world. Yosef is thinking about Netzach. He's thinking about Kol HaYamim. Not just the years he's going to live on this earth, but all the years he's going to live on the next world. Not that I don't like you as a roommate, it's not the issue, but how is the sin going to impact me, Kol HaYamim? I'm going to be with you in your place, in your world, in your... Every sin is a myopic forfeiture of eternity for transience. I'll say that again. It's myopic, because you don't see the long picture. Forfeiture of eternity for transience. In the immediate moment, you have a need. It is physical. It is psychological. It's often both. That's what makes it so hard to avoid. It's psychology preying with an E upon you, expressing itself in a physically enjoyable act, so it's hard to deconstruct it and to avoid it. And if you think about Netzach, and you say, okay, this moment right now at 10 o'clock at night or 2 in the afternoon, I have this need, it will feel good, it will serve my practical need, but what are the consequences? What's the casualty? How much of my Netzach? If you saw the world as clearly as you see it during the Eilim, your whole life was the Aron HaKodesh open, and you know that every action is a reaction, and every sin has a consequence, and Sefer Chaim Mesim Sivan. That's the world we used to live in, ironically. The world we used to live in was a world of cause and effect. We were able to trace effects directly to causes, and that created a moral deterrent and a moral clarity that we don't have. We don't have an effect. If you sin right now, you're not going to face an immediate consequence. You're not going to say, oh, this is what's happening. In those days, the Navi said, this is because of that, and that is because of this, and this is because of that. Now, how does that impact freedom of choice? It's an interesting question. If things are so clear, do we even have freedom of choice? Did Pyro have freedom of choice at a certain point? How is it taken away? But let's dial it down to our world. If you can somehow bring yourself to think, so much of avoiding sin is broad thinking and looking at the long picture and saying, okay, right now I have this need, it's going to help me, but how is it going to affect my future? How is it going to affect my future in this world? How is it going to affect my future, right? And sometimes you see people that one minor act of indiscretion, one statement they make on the radio, one racial slur, one act of aggression, and the whole career is finished. They've built a career for 40, 50 years, and the whole career suffers. And it's, remember, in the 90s, it just Kenneth Starr, who was a prosecutor, uncovered the Clinton scandal, just passed away, so in his newspaper. So the Monica Lewinsky scandal, I know you all probably heard about it, read about it, I lived through it, I remember it. And I remember one of the interviewers, Barbara Walters, a big interviewer, saying, if you can have one question for Bill Clinton, what would the question be? And she had a good question. It was a four-word question. We can make it to a three-word question. She would like to ask Bill Clinton, what were you thinking? Like, what was your thought process? This is a college intern. You're in some broom closet in the White House. The eyes of the world are upon you. You're a very successful president. The economy was booming. You're going to go on down, in theory, as one of the top 15, 20 presidents. It was just like, what were you thinking?
the answer is you're not thinking that. And you're not thinking about the long term, you're just thinking about right now, it's 2:30, Sunday afternoon. So Yosef is able to think Chatas Yilechav Kal Yamin. Now let's move to Rabbi Tzadok and Rabbi Akiva, who were in the same situation. In Rabbi Tzadok's case, what was it? He was captured, so his captor sent him some women. I don't know why she would send women, but whatever, maybe he was a distinguished person. Remember, capturing people those days was not always to abuse them. Sometimes just to get ransoms. You're not going to chashuv a person. You get a lot of ransoms, so you treat him. How would you treat dignitaries if you're holding ransom? Some prostitutes, some zonas that night. Rabbi Akiva was on a diplomatic mission to Rome. Rabbi Akiva made a lot of diplomatic missions to Rome. It's been a very, very difficult time. I'm not sure whether this is before the Bar Kokhba rebellion, after the Bar Kokhba rebellion. So he's a visiting diplomat. What are you visiting? Send over some whiskey, send over some flowers, send over some. So each in a situation, and both women were more, that was their job. And from their standpoint, they were slave girls or whatever. That was their responsibility to come back and to tell their senders that I gave the dignitaries an enjoyable night. There was no objectification, obviously objectification, but not on the part of the Rikiva Bitzada. So what happened? I'll describe both stories and then I'll contrast them because they're contrasting stories. They're found in Abbas Dribnasan in Parak Shishasar, the 16th Parak of Abbas Dribnasan. So Bitzadok spent the whole night not looking at these women. There was one woman, and instead learning Torah. Okay? Rabbi Akiva spent the whole night not looking at these two women who were all dressed up and ready, but spitting on the floor. Okay, that's the first difference. The second difference is we actually have the post-game interviews. In each case, the matron, the woman who had captured, it was actually a woman that had captured Rabbi Akiva, and a woman, captured Bitzadok, and a woman was hosting Rabbi Akiva. But in each case, the host, or the hostess, who had sent these women, asked the respective people, like, what went wrong? Why didn't you? Like, so obviously, aren't you a red-blooded American? Aren't you a red-blooded Israel? Like, just the most normal thing in the world. So we actually have their thought process. We don't just have their behavior, we have their thought process. So what does Rabbi Tzadok say? What does Rabbi Akiva say? So I'll start with Rabbi Akiva, the spitter. Rabbi Akiva, the spitter, said, oh, you wanted me to interact with these women? They're more disgusting to me than lice and vermin and snakes and beetles and nibbles and trifles. But in Rabbi Tzadok's post-game interview, when he was asked, like, what happened, why didn't you send them to you, he said, I'm a descendant, I think, of Aaron HaKohen. He was a Kohen. I'm a prince. You expect me to degrade myself? You expect me to debauch my... What's the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tzadok? The difference is two different types of Yirah Shamayim. And those two different types of Yirah Shamayim came to the fore in the 19th century. The 19th century began with the Musar movement. The Musar movement was long story so long ago. The Musar movement was dominated by a phrase that you could say called Katnas Adam, Katnas Olam. Okay, the world is dark, the world is empty, the world is frightening, the world is dangerous. We don't know how to make our way through the world. We want to get to the next world. This is just an entranceway. The next world is the palace. Spend as little time as you can in the entranceway. Escape with minimal harm. Follow the instructions of the Chachamim. That's the tone of Masil Tisharim, which was written about 100 years beforehand. So that's the tone of the early Musar Sfarim. Heavy, heavy emphasis on Yiras Onesh, not even Yiras HaRamamos. And what happened was the world changed over the course of the century. Until it changed in our world. A lot of people find that can't be the primary Musar voice in our world because it's disconnected from our reality. It's important Musar voices are corrected as a checks and balances. But even by the end of the 19th century, science and technology and Darwinism and social growth and progress, and all of a sudden there was a dichotomy between that voice of Musar and the world that people lived in. And sadly, it's why so many millions and millions and millions and millions of Jews just went out. They walked out the door because the world was so different. And there weren't voices that could capture their imagination. And there was another Musi Yeshiva that emerged called the Slobodka Musi Yeshiva. And they spoke about godless Adam. And the world is great, and the world is full of potential. And Kodesh Baruch Hu gave it opportunity. But you are the pinnacle of creation, and you shouldn't waste that lofty status and those incredible gifts Hashem gave you simply because of something great, but not good enough for you. You deserve a first-class seat, not a business-class seat. You deserve a private jet. Don't waste your time in the first-class seat. You deserve something better. And it came to the fore in two different ways. For example, when you see a woman, okay, so in the old Musar school, if you see a woman coming in a creed that you have a desire for, you say, Rima Vitzalea, that woman that I see right now, not in a way that's disparaging of her, but there's a passing world, So they look very attractive right now. But if I fast forward to 100 years from now, I'll be in the ground, she'll be in the ground, we'll all be in the ground, we're all dust and earth. What should I, this is a small world, I'm a small little insignificant amoeba. What? Whereas in Slobodka, the response is godless of them. Dear Prince, hostage, beneath your station, the Talmidim and Slobodka were dressed in the fanciest suits and smoked the best Cuban cigars. They walked around in their cylinder hats, and they were the princes of humanity. And you see these two approaches coming to the fore, in Rabbi Tzadok and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tzadok went to Slobodka. Rabbi Akiva was the Talmud of Yisrael Slobodka. Rabbi Akiva spent the night spitting, trying to turn this experience from an elegant one into a despicable, repulsive one, spitting on the floor. And then when he was asked the next day, why didn't that disgusting, they're just bodies of blood and guts and pus and DNA, and why should they even be interested? Was Rabbi Tzadok was saying, you know what? It may be very attractive. Look at something that looks beautiful. Hashem created beauty in this world. Hashem created talent. Hashem created opportunity. But I'm a son of Aaron HaKohen. There's nothing more for me. I'm not going to take all that pride and all that prestige and all that station of life and everything I've been gifted with and sacrifice it. It would be good. There's nothing wrong with it. You're not a Rebbe of a Toleh. You're not a worm. You're not a Sheketz. So I don't have to spit at you. I spend my time learning Torah. I'm going to take my time to some bigger thing. I've got some bigger fish to fry in this world. I can't waste my time. It's great. Yeah, it's all great. Nothing. But don't demonize the world. Don't villainize the world. Now, building life in Avodas Hashem is a blend of two. You need sometimes to have the voice in your mind of villainization and of dismissal. And you can't always be a Slobodka guy. But you also, in our world especially, that original voice in most of the world is dead. That's not our frequency. It's like, it's not where we are on the radio dial. We don't live, if you want to live that type of lifestyle, then you can. I think there are some places, let's say in Bnei Brak, where you live without electricity on Shabbos, and you live in a small 15-meter room, and so that becomes your world, it's fine. A different way to find a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The danger is schizophrenia. The danger is where you learn in the base matters one thing, and then you walk outside and you do something else. And that's called a disconnect between Torah. To try to connect your life. To connect your life, when you learn and when you become an Ovid Hashem, it has to be reflective of how you lead your life. If not, it's worse schizophrenic. Even if it works, it becomes very shallow and disconnected because you're role-playing. You play different roles in different settings. If your whole life can be one long arichos, one long continuum, and you're in the same frequency the whole time, then every minute reinvents and re-enriches the other minute. Okay, so these are three stories. Yosef HaTzadik thought about eternity. Rabbi Tzadik said, Pasnish, I'm a prince, and Yiddish beneath my dignity. And Rabbi Akiva spinning on the floor saying, Rimo Vitoleh. Tomorrow is Rashi. Next week we'll see where we're heading. Got to move on to some of the Rishonim maybe. Okay? Have a great day, everyone. Shir will be at 8:51. 8:50.
Come
to again? Yes.
This is Slovakia.